Are we recording?
You guys are professional.
Oh, mate, it's amateur hour.
Welcome to the Unforgiving 60 with your hosts, Ben Pronk and Tim Curtis. Two ex-SAS guys armed with MBAs, seeking out people who are leading lives less ordinary in order to find out how they fill their unforgiving minutes and what helps them go always a little further.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Unforgiving 60. I am joined, as always, by my extremely faithful, loyal, dedicated, omnipresent co-host, Tim.
Trusted.
Trusted.
G'day, Ben.
How are you? Hey, Tim, our prerequisite for being a guest on this show is to be leading a life less ordinary, correct?
That's correct.
Would you consider someone who owns their own aircraft company to be doing just that?
Your own aeroplane company?
Yep.
I would draw the conclusion they're living a life less ordinary.
Me too. We met our guest this week, Jack Moshevis, in an airport lounge. We were coming back from Alaska where we'd spent a bit of time, and we bumped into him in Brisbane, a very serendipitous sort of meeting. But we got talking. We found out we had a mutual acquaintance in Matt Hall. And we subsequently found out that Jack now owns the aircraft company that Matt used to fly, MX Aircraft.
MX Aircraft, an aerobatic aircraft. It is built to pull more than 14 Gs.
That sounds like a lot.
And the other interesting thing about Jack is that he worked with Matt. And in fact, on the wall of his office is a signed poster that Matt has given to him, and he'll talk a little bit about that in this episode.
Yeah, we get to talk about not just aircraft, but, you know, some pretty interesting philosophies on life and happiness and success.
And as always, there's a struggle in there. Let's get on with the show.
Righto, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Unforgiving 60. Now, we are recording this episode from Jandakot, which is a suburb on the outskirts of Perth, famous for its airfield. And in fact, we're here in the heart of Aerojax, which is a hangar, and we'll talk a lot more about what's in the hangar, and in particular, the company that it houses. But we're here on the invite of Jack Moshevis. Jack, how are you?
G'day, guys. How are you?
Really good. And I forgot to mention that I'm joined, as always, by Tim.
I'm used to being omitted.
It's good to have a talented bunch of guys here.
Unlikely. Now, we met Jack in an airport lounge. And for our avid listeners, if you cast your minds back to RV9, Tim and I recorded a session in the Qantas Club in LA. If you fast forward about 12 hours of uncomfortable aeroplane flight forward, that was when we first met Jack in Brisbane. And Jack, why don't we start, before we get into the good stuff, why don't we start by a sort of bit of your background and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, so for me, I guess I've always had a love of aviation as a child. I remember being in the backyard of my parents' Bowger house and watching the old Channel 7 helicopter flying over, and I always remember as a kid, wow, I want to fix them and fly them. And that sort of led my love of aviation. And from there, I obviously went to high school like we all did and got out of there and always had that inkling of aviation. And, I'd always have a project at my parents' house. I find myself being a mechanic, mechanically orientated. And I always had a project I would build, and came out of high school and applied to get into the TAFE course, doing the mechanical side of aviation. And that was it, and managed to get into that. Did a full-time year of that and managed to jag an apprenticeship out at Pearce Air Force Base.
Yeah, right.
So we worked on the PC-9s.
Yep.
It was a contract company called Airfly that would go out there. And, yeah, I was lucky enough to go out there and did 4 years out there as an apprenticeship. And that was it. The dream started.
Was that pretty cool as a young appy? So PC-9s, for those who don't know, they've just got rid of them, haven't they?
They have.
So they were the lead-in trainer.
Starting to this year.
Okay. Yep. So they're phasing out from the Royal Australian Air Force, but they're a pretty high-performance aircraft, aren't they?
Oh, they're awesome, yeah. And that's why they've done so well, and they're used across the world as a trainer for a lot of militaries.
You're right.
Look, it was for me as an apprenticeship, it was awesome. You know, they, like a lot of people, you know, you get your GA people, you get your airline people, and for me, you know, we missed out on the GA aspect, being out at Pearce. We only focused on one aeroplane. But it gave you the ability to slow down. Like the military, there was no pressure in getting the aeroplane out. So you got to learn what you were doing, you know, without any restrictions. You had a good bunch of trained guys, a lot of them ex-military. So we spent 6 months doing sheet metal work, and we did the emergency, you know, the ejection seats, and so we had the ability to do things, and obviously repeating it brings the skill level up. We did it a lot. It may have got a bit tedious towards the end, but training wise, it was awesome. You know, it missed out the piston stuff that we do in GA, but as a training basis, yeah, it was awesome.
Yep. And so from there, where to?
So from there, I sort of floated around a bit. Went to a company called Paspali doing rebuilds and a Mallard, which is a big float plane. Floated up and down Jandakot, started getting into the GA stuff, which realistically is what I love, you know, as a piston engines. You're in there. The military side sort of restricted fixing things. So for me, it was about getting down there and actually working on aeroplanes and then getting on piston engines, which I enjoyed. And, you know, starting a bit on helicopters. You know, I was lucky enough to get a job with a guy building warbirds. So, and it's, for me, it's satisfying. You're building something, like you're doing fabric work and you're covering your flight control. And then once it's covered, you see it fly and that's all you, you know, like awesome.
So we took a tour of the shop, Jack, and there are many things in here. There's rotary wing, there's fixed wing, there's old, there's new. What's your favourite thing to work on?
Look, I don't do a lot of it now, but the fabric stuff for me was a passion. And like I said to you, that's probably the biggest sort of satisfaction you can get when you're building something from scratch or repairing something from scratch and seeing it go out there and fly. But it's hard to pinpoint. I love the helicopters, but I love the aeroplanes. The variety, I think, is probably... I actually prefer the variety to any one thing.
Is there... So, I mean, this is a loaded question. We're sitting here on Mustang Road. I grew up sort of reading stories of World War II, you know, the old warbirds. And, you know, I was in love with Mustangs. I knew about the Mustang aircraft before I knew about the Mustang car, which I now own one of those. It was a big thing for me. I've always got a soft spot for that. Is there a particular airframe that just sort of captures your heart?
Look, I've done I guess probably my favourite airplane would be the Stearman.
Yeah, you know, right.
I did the biplane.
Yep.
Yeah. Getting in that, like, I've been lucky enough to fly a friend's Mustang.
All right.
And it's cool. Yeah. To get in something like that and see what it was involved in and the people and the history behind that, like, it's awesome to know, and you're in one. But for me, I've done a lot of work on the Stearmans. I've covered a lot of them. I love, it's graceful. Your head's out in the wind. You know, you're going inverted, doing aerobatics, and it's just such a gentleman's aeroplane. And, you know, you've got the smell of that burning oil. To me,
That's aviation.
That's it.
Yeah, right.
That's, you know, when you've done that, you know you've made it.
Yeah.
I reckon, so.
And so tell us, you obviously had a bit of involvement with the Red Bull Air Race. Now, we've clearly interviewed Matt Hall, and Matt's recently just won. I think we decided he's going to be the perennial champion, the undefeatable world champion.
Matt Hall is the champion! Finally, Australia lifts the title!
We need to go have a beer when I'm 90 and I'm going to tell everyone I'm the reigning world champion. Feels bloody good.
Hey, tell us about your sort of journey through the Red Bull space.
So I just started my maintenance business then, and I met Matt a few years beforehand at a Red Bull event. And... he had a few issues and he was looking for a new technician, and he asked a few people that he had known and like friends of mine, and they said there's only one person you can get is Jack. So I was lucky enough, I went out and had a beer with him, and he asked me to become his technician, and that was for the 2010 season. And then
is that the best place to be interviewed over a beer?
It's the only way, isn't it? That's how you get a true reflection of a person.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was lucky enough, and I did that for a year. I know he had a lot of pressure, so I think he was quite grateful that I came on board. As I said, if you read his book, I was definitely a lifesaver for him.
What does he quote in his book about you?
Yeah, he says I'm a lifesaver. I don't want to boast about it, but...
Yeah. No, that's a pretty good rap.
So he obviously said you're a lifesaver.
Yeah.
And can you give us the context on why he said that?
I think for him, he, you know, he had you know, he was finding it difficult to gel with his new, with his technician, and you know, being new in the thing. I guess it's one less pressure he wanted. He just wanted to learn, like, just focus on flying. And for me coming on board, I sort of took that pressure away from him. And it was, you know, I was also getting to know what he knew and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, no, it just worked well for him. He was happy. He had someone that, you know, understood him, and we worked well together. And so for him, it was, I guess, it was a relief.
So this is going to betray my absolute ignorance, but what does a job entail? What were you doing as a technician in a race team?
So basically the aeroplane would come, you know, it would come disassembled. We'd assemble it. You know, we talk about mods, and we might try and carry out a few mods. We'd service the aeroplane. You know, he'd go fly it. We'd turn him around during the race. And at the end of the race, we'd disassemble it.
And the mods you're talking about, were you sort of looking for I don't know, edge in terms
absolutely.
Of torque or top end or whatever? Yeah.
From when I did, it was very minimal. Like, mm-hmm. I think now they've got tacticians and, yep. you know, they've got engineering teams behind them.
Yep.
So for us, it was very, very minimal. You know, you get into a race, you've got... You get there on a Monday and you're flying on a Friday. I mean, you do a couple of flights beforehand. So it was go, go, go. So you don't have a lot of time. And then you're packing it, putting it in a shipping container or an aeroplane to go to the next race. So you don't see the aeroplane. And we come up with a few ideas and, yeah, a few developments and go from there.
And so each time you're essentially stripping wings off?
Absolutely. Wings off, tail off.
Right.
Yep. All the flight controls.
I take it you wouldn't want to get it wrong putting it back.
It's a pretty tricky. We would sit and watch. I would certainly sit and watch the first time it flew.
I think you'd be good at putting IKEA furniture together.
Yeah, I'd do everything without instructions. Might take twice as long.
We watched Matt fly the last race of the last event of the last season of the Red Bull Air Race, and he was described at the end of the race as being highly technical. Is he highly technical in terms of his understanding of the airframe and the performance of the aircraft?
Yeah, very much so. And that's what I was saying. You know, he's I think he was by far the best, and I'd hate to say it to him, but he was definitely by far the best pilot. And it wasn't just the aspect of flying. It was, you know, you could just see he would read things and visualise things differently to everyone else. And, you know, and I'm surprised he didn't win a World Series earlier. There's no doubt he should have.
Did that mean you couldn't pull the wool over his eyes with like the classic mechanics trick?
You know what? Full credit to him. He knew I knew what I was doing, and he let us do it. And that's the way it should have been. And I always said he doesn't need to focus on what we're doing. Yeah. He needs to focus on what he was doing.
And that's what you said about the lifesaver.
Absolutely.
Thing, you know, it took
I
that
think
off
so.
His
like
mind.
I mean, I've never sat down with him and spoken to him about it, but yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Is there as much competition for you as there is for a pilot in an event like that? Do you really feel the spirit of competition?
Oh, we were certainly involved in the whole competition of the team. As far as us, sort of, it was a small production, you know, so we all got along really well. And you know, even the pilots, we all became good friends, and we've got some really good friends out of it we see all the time, you know. So to be involved in a year, there was certainly the banter between teams, but as far as technicians go, between technicians, I think we all got along and had like a mutual respect for everyone. So,
how much sort of race secrecy was there? I mean, was there a spirit of sharing? You know, was it a good collegiate atmosphere?
Oh,
between the teams,
you kept it to yourself.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah,
you know, and a lot of guys developed a lot of stuff, and you know, I mean, for me, like I said, it was probably the earlier days. We didn't go as deep compared to what they do now. But even now, you know, because we've got the MX business, I'm trying to get some ideas to improve the MX, you know, so trying to pull it out of them as well. I think they're going to start to give up a few secrets now, hopefully.
Now, we want to talk MX in a second, but the Red Bull race is obviously finished. What are your thoughts? You know, could it have been done differently? You know, could it have been bigger than it was?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. And I think you'd find it hard pressed for someone to say otherwise. Yeah. It is a great event, you know, that everyone you talk to and everyone I meet, and I say, oh yeah, we built the planes for Rebel Air Race, or I was involved in the Rebel Air Race from Perth. They all say, oh man, that was a great event. You know, I used to love going down there. And these are guys that aren't aviation, you know, enthusiasts. So there wouldn't be a bad, I wouldn't find anyone that would say too much bad about it. Probably could have been done better maybe. I hope someone picks it up. I think the Red Bull model, where Red Bull has it as a Red Bull event, was probably the wrong way to go. And they talked about sort of breaking down the teams, and each team, you know, got their own sponsors and a bit like F1.
Like Formula,
and I reckon if it goes in that sort of direction, I don't think it can initially because of the funding of it. But if someone picked it up and then broke it down into that sort of direction, I think it'd be a great event. Great event, yeah.
We're going to come back to high-performance aircraft in a little while, but I wanted to cross over and talk about the business of aviation. Now, before we started recording, Jack, you were saying that your first foray into business wasn't so successful. Could you talk a little bit about that and how perhaps not going so well has worked for you, lessons learned, how you overcame it?
Yeah, look, for me, I mean, I don't want to harp on it as, you know, at the end of the day, where I came from, it certainly improved where I'm at now. But, you know, like I was saying to you guys, I brought a business and I guess that's my aspect of it. I'm sure the other party that had brought the business has got his own aspect. But at the end of the day, I brought a business and, you know, we had a deal and, you know, the deal was over a couple of years, and to come in one day and see everything gone and you're halfway through that deal was pretty heartbreaking. But, you know, we could have lied down. I mean, like I said to you before, we need a certificate to maintain. So by him taking everything, he took the certificate. So there was a guy that I barely knew. I rung and, you know, full credit to the guy. And I haven't spoken to him since, to be honest with you, which is a shame. But he allowed me to use his certificate, and he allowed me to keep going the next day. And I could have folded up, but in the end of the day, I had 10 grand in the bank. And, you know, we were kicking goals, had a few employees. And, you know, like I said, I had 10 grand in the bank. So, mate, I went and brought an office desk. I rang the tool guy. He came out. I managed to borrow a certificate. Within 6 weeks, I had my own certificate in place, and we're kicking goals and cranking.
So for background, Jack was saying that particular business breakup, the partner cleared out everything, including the fridge, the desk.
Everything. Our food in the fridge, our water fountain. There was just our toolboxes and the aeroplane we were working
on.
You
rocked up on Monday with nothing and had to start from scratch, including getting the certificate.
Absolutely.
And the bloody office furniture.
Yeah. And like I said, it was as heartbreaking as it was. I guess I could see the writing on the wall. Maybe I was a bit arrogant, but I did exactly what I said I was going to do from the start, and we kept doing that, and, you know, and building the business up, and yeah, so.
Did it change how you sort of view other people in terms of trust and that, or do you just sort of write it off as this was a bad dude, you know?
Mate, you know, he wasn't a bad dude, you know, but I'd been warned, and at the end of the day, you know, I could harp on about it, and, you know, I always say bad people, get them out of your life as quick as you can. And it's a shame for him, I find, more than me.
Yeah.
You know, obviously a friend doesn't do that, but that's life and we move on. And look, some days I sort of thought to myself, man, you know, is it worth it? You know, you do come across bad people.
Yeah.
But like I said, you get them out of your life as quick as you can and you surround yourself with good people and that's what keeps you going. You do what you say you're going to do and that's it. Yeah. So...
And I reckon there's something about being able to live with yourself. You know,
absolutely. People talk about karma and I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad things that go on with the world and people get by and the bad people still live. So I don't know about that. But, you know, you just do what you do well and, mate, you're nice to everyone and, mate, that's it. Yeah. Look at me, the philosopher.
So standing there with an open fridge and feeling that heartbreak, did you ever consider giving up?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. I mean, you walk into that and, you know, you've got a full shed and you come in and it's empty. And I had a couple of good employees and, you know, it wasn't just me. You know, there was three other guys it affected. It was, you know, it was their families. You know, and to be honest with you, I probably thought about it for 2 minutes and that was it. Rung the tool guy and just kept going, you know. And I got a supporting wife and so all that stuff sort of gels in and, mate, that's what life's about, you know. You can give up, but you don't succeed if you give up.
MX. Part of the, in fact, the only prerequisite for being a guest on this show is that you're leading a life less ordinary, that you've got an interesting tale. And when we first met you in that airport lounge and, you know, you asked, what are we doing? We're just these consultants sort of coming back from a job. And we asked, what you do? And you said, I own an aircraft company. I mean, that instantly fulfills that criteria. So tell us about MX. I'd be really interested in what you knew of the aircraft beforehand and what sort of drove you to buy it.
Well, you know, like us meeting, it's opportunity and, you know, everyone gets opportunity. I was lucky enough to work for Matt. Matt owned an MX. I remember my first day, I didn't even know the aeroplane, to be honest. I barely knew what MX was.
Mm-hmm. Does it stand for anything?
It stands for Meshovitz Extreme now.
Good answer.
So the guy brought it off. His surname was Myers, and that's how it came MX, but yep. It's now Meshovitz Extreme.
Got it.
But, yeah, so, once again, I was lucky enough to work with Matt, and, my first day on the job, it was assembling an MX, and I had it done in half a day, and I was looking around, and the guys with the competition aeroplane hadn't even started getting it together, and I'm like, mate, I said to him, hey, have I done this right? He goes, well, I'm finished, and everyone's still, it's my first day on the job, and I've got the aeroplane done in half the time as everyone else.
Was it like Tim with the IKEA furniture? He's assembled it, and there's still a few bits.
Yeah, but he had instructions. I still got it wrong.
Double-sided tape, that's all you need to get through.
Absolutely. And for me, being mechanically minded, that aeroplane just went together so well. And that's when I fell in love with it. Yeah. Mate, I would go in the mornings, and I'd literally go up to the aeroplane and give the fuselage a hug. And I don't tell people that. And every day I'd go in and give it a hug. And I remember saying to myself back then, one day I'm going to own you. And by that, I meant own the company. And I thought to myself, like, that's ever going to happen. And, mate, the opportunity came up and I brought it.
That's pretty cool. And before we come to that purchase, easy to work on, but flies all right as well.
So they say, yeah, yep. Mate, I think it's the best aerobatic aeroplane out there.
Yeah, right.
It's modern, it's full carbon fibre. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first, fully carbon fibre aeroplanes. It's sleek, mechanically it goes together well. The people that fly it absolutely love it.
So based on a Giles aircraft design, you're saying?
So the way the MX came about, the Chris brought a Giles, mm-hmm. and the Giles is a four-cylinder carbon fibre aeroplane built by a guy named Richard Giles. And, so he brought it and basically wanted to put a six-cylinder in it, and he developed it, put a six-cylinder in, modified it, and the very first MX still is registered as a Giles. And look, the aeroplane's come a long way since then, but, that was its beginnings.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And the Giles, they sold 70 Giles, and there's such a passionate following for the Giles as well. So, and like we now have not the rights, but we've got a lot of the rights to the Giles. So we look after, if anyone needs anything, we try and help them out as well. And, it's a big family, big community.
Mm-hmm. And so how did that opportunity come about to actually buy the company?
To be honest with you, a good mate of mine, Carl, rung me up one day and said, do you know MX is for sale? And that was it.
Did he know that you were in the habit of hugging the...
Definitely not.
But he knew you liked the...
Absolutely. And, we're best mates, so he obviously knows my background. And, I thought, what? So, I had no money at the time. Aerojax was my business, but, we're pumping all our money back into it to build the business. And I basically just rung the guy and I made him a stupid offer. And he accepted. So, and this is me probably being a bit negative or a bit naive, not negative. Mate, I thought I could get the money. So I'm like, sweet, let's try. We'll go to the bank. I had a really good bank manager at the time, but, we borrowed everything we could. So I went to him and said, I need this for this. And, it wasn't happening. So I'd already made the guy an offer and I didn't have the money. And another good mate of mine, this is what I said about surrounding yourself with good people. A mate of mine who was a customer of mine became a good mate of mine, and once again, one of my best mates. He saw my passion, and I said to him, "Oh, can you lend me the money, mate?" I can't remember if I asked him or if he said, "Mate, I'll lend you the money."
Yeah,
and that's how I got the money.
That's awesome.
So, mate,
and so that was purely on him knowing you, your confidence, 100%. Your passion.
Yeah.
No sort of business plan, any of that
Nothing
sort of stuff.
At all.
It was just he believed in you.
I said I'm mechanically minded, didn't I? Can't read a book unless it's got pictures.
Good to go.
Absolutely, full credit.
Mm-hmm.
We got everything in place. He lent me the money. We bought the business. We got it out of here. He can see how I've developed it. I try and keep him in the loop, and he's here all the time. And it's great.
So. For our listeners, MX, high-performance aircraft, two models, and correct, jump in at any stage, two models, an MXS, which is a aerobatic primarily aircraft.
Aerobatic single seat,
single seat. MX2, which is a two-seat, still high-performance, but more also able to...
To be honest with you, they're both high-performance aeroplanes. Yep. Like I say, now they're a specific aeroplane, you know, designed for a specific market. The MX-2, you can take an extra person with you, but it's a tight cockpit. But it's the difference between, you know, going for a drive in a Mercedes and going for a drive in a Ferrari. It's a compact aeroplane. But it gives someone the ability to take a mate up. It's, you know, there's a bit more room if they're on their own to put a bit of baggage. They're very similar aerobatic wise. You know, there's only probably a foot and a half longer in one, the MX-2, than there is in the MX-S. So, yeah, comparatively, same wing. You know, the tail's a little bit bigger. So it's, yeah, very similar aeroplane.
And so who buys an MX? Who's your market?
So, most of our aeroplanes in America, 90% of them are high-end, high-performance sort of aerobatic guys. A lot of them are like air show guys that take them out to air shows and perform at air shows. Our best known guy is a guy named Rob Holland. You know, the first aeroplane we built, we sent to him, and he's just won the World Aerobatic 4-Minute Freestyle Championship in France. So that's the level.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
And you told us an interesting story about, which I thought was pretty much about customer service, but there was an issue with one aircraft that hadn't been assembled properly. There wasn't a sort of spreader plate on the engine mount. And this happened before you'd acquired the company. And the very first thing you did was emailed every single owner to sort of tell them about this, engage with them and sort of get them up to speed.
Yeah, so when I brought the company, previous to me owning it, there'd been one fatality in an aeroplane. Unfortunately, the guy had modified the aeroplane. Sort of at the transition when I brought the company, there was another aeroplane, and we didn't know what happened, but he lost his engine. The wing had snapped. Luckily, he bailed out, and he was okay. And that was sort of just as I brought the aeroplane, and we had really no idea. There was so much speculation going around. So the first thing I did when I brought the company is I knew there were a few issues, you know, from people. Like, I'd gone to America. I'd met a lot of the owners prior to me buying the company. You know, I'd spoken to a lot of them. So, they you know, everyone's always wants to know, tell you about their thing. So they all told me what their issues were. So the first thing I did is I emailed everyone that owned an MX. And I said, hey, guys, my name's Jack. I've just bought MX. I want to make it the greatest airplane. Let me know your issues. So, and that was our first step. The first year we sort of got everyone's feedback and we emailed everyone, you know, whether it was speculated or, you know, whether we had evidence, we emailed everyone, hey guys, these are the issues people are having. Can't confirm them, but you know, just be aware that this could potentially be an issue. And it was more about when they do their service, they can inspect those areas. And so obviously we had that one where the engine fell out of France. And once again, I didn't really know what was going on. And Rob Holland had an aeroplane, and he was doing a walk around in his aeroplane one day, and he noticed his engine was just leaning a bit low, and he picked it up, and he could move the engine up and down. So basically, I got him to an engineer I knew over there, and we put it in the back of a truck, and we found that he had an issue with his engine mounts, the way it was designed and the way it was fitted. And that was basically our point to kick off the issue that. And I basically emailed everyone. I got straight on board, emailed everyone, hey, this is the issue. I spoke to our engineers and we came up with a quick solution, which we put out to everyone to do the repair. And then we came out, and that was just to keep everyone going and knowing they were going to be safe. And then we came out with a proper repair and we came up with a proper repair scheme and we sent it out to everyone so they could implement it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And have you found that you've got a good community of owners? I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing.
Awesome. Awesome. Absolutely. And like I said, I love the aeroplane. And that was, I never thought about making money out of the business. So for me, you know, that aeroplane went together so well. Being mechanically modern, I absolutely love the aeroplane. And the guys that fly absolutely love the aeroplane as well, you know. So to see all those guys, it's a great community. And that's my feedback. When someone says something to me, I put something out to someone, and they send it back, you know, they'll either say, oh, we don't like it because of this, or we like it because of this. And obviously you get your two sides where someone loves what they've got and someone wants to change something. And you try and meet in the middle, or, you know, you try and satisfy everyone if you can. And sometimes you can't, but, you do your best. Yeah. But good bunch of guys, mate, really good bunch of guys. And they sell the product, not me, you know, so.
How long have you had the business for now?
So probably just over 2 years.
And what's your dream for it, if you could predict the perfect road ahead? What would that look like?
Oh, to sell a million aeroplanes would be great. But it's, look, like I said, money's, I've never been focused on money. I think if you do something well, money will come. So for me, if I can get, you know, if I can, we can do a good amount of aeroplanes, that we've got enough guys just working over and it's ticking over. It adds to what we do in Aero Jacks. You know, it gives us the ability to build a paint shop now. If we can build more of the composite side and we can start doing some more composite work. For me, it's just about building a business, you know. I mean, that's the other aspect as well. It's, you know, for me, Aero Jacks now, it's not stagnant, but I've got it as big as I can potentially get it. So for me, it's, you know, it's getting my teeth back into building a business and doing that aspect as well.
What's the obstacle between now and getting to there?
Finances, funding. You know, I probably wouldn't be the first person to say this, but, you know, you look at America and you look at Australia, and our government hinders so much what we do when there's so many successful, like so many smart people in Australia and so many great ideas that have left. And, you know, a lot of our parts, unfortunately, are made in America, from engines to propellers. As soon as I bring it in, I get taxed. So, you know, and then I send it out, I get taxed. And, you know, there's no real incentive that drives a person to want to succeed and build business. There's, you know, there's very little out there. And it makes our product expensive, you know. And if we're not making a dollar, which we haven't yet, why do you do a business? And like I said, I'm not focused on money, but ultimately that's going to be the goal. You know, I've got to make a living as well.
So you were saying before we went on air that about 80% of the components are manufactured in the States, 20% manufactured here. You do the assembly here potentially to ship back to the States.
Absolutely.
And then
our biggest
you get
market
told
is America, yep.
In and out.
Yep, our biggest market is America. So, you know, with 350,000 people compared to 25, I wish we could sell more here, and hopefully we do. But that was, you know, so we... I initially looked at trying to find, because I never had any composite experience or any composite, you know, tooling or anything. So for me, it was about establishing the business. And, you know, we went to a couple of composite shops in Australia and the prices were double. And it's a shame. I would love to bring it all here. And I guess that's my goal now, is maybe they've put their price up more. I don't really know, but if I can build a lot of it here, I'd do it for the same price as I can in America, you know, I will. But it's buying the equipment that kills it. So right now, we build around 20% of the stuff here, and eventually we'll start building a lot of the smaller stuff. So we're building the composite oven now, and it's an experimental aeroplane, and there's a lot of, like, the European system restricts a lot of experimental aeroplanes to go in there and fly. So it scares a lot of the Europeans off, and we do have a couple over there, but it just makes it a lot harder for them to maintain and operate. So. Which, you know, if our, not to say about ourselves, but we will look at that, and we always say to them, we'll assist you. If you do buy one, you know, we'll come over there and we'll assist you. We'll get the engineering you require to meet those goals for the authorities, and you know, we'll help them out. Yeah. But right now, like, we're stagnant, and we've got enough sales to keep us going. And don't get me wrong, we are improving our engineering side of it for them, and, you know, we're building, like, construction manuals to assist them. So I do have them in mind.
In mind,
know. Yeah. So we haven't kept them dry.
So it's an aerobatic aircraft. How proficient as a pilot do I need to be at aerobatics before I buy an MX aircraft?
How proficient as a pilot are you at aerobatics?
I was going to say, you've got a fair way to go.
I'm limited.
Tim, what have you were gobbing off the other day about, you've flown a few aircraft, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So tell us about aviation, seeing as you're the expert in the room, mate. But for our listeners, what have you flown to?
C-130J.
Yep.
DHC-4 with you, actually.
Yep, Caribou.
F-18 twin-seater.
Right.
Blackhawk.
Yep.
Kiowa. I think that's about it.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Right. So, clearly, well-experienced. But back to you.
The question was unreal.
Take it off and land.
Oh, wow. I did take off and land the F-18.
Beautiful.
That thing's pilot-proof. Well, no, but to the question, how aerobatically proficient...
Don't knock him. He might be my next potential customer.
how aerobatically proficient would you need to be?
You have a look at some of the videos, and this thing looks like a remote control in the air. They are highly aerobatic. But in the same token, you don't have to fly it to that capability. You know, you fly it to your capability. Now, everyone I speak to, I mean, it takes off and lands easy enough. So as an aeroplane, you know, you've got to come in quite quick. So you've got to understand the aeroplane, but, you know, it's open to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I do say it's a high-end aerobatic aeroplane, and yeah, it's targeted to that market, but there's no reason why, you know, a novice can fly it.
Couldn't get in it.
And Where is it in terms of price points?
Look, competitively with our market, probably, like I said, we sell it as a kit. So our angle with that is that we've given the people that want a high-performance aeroplane that can't afford it the ability to buy it. You know, and they can build it themselves and save $100,000 on buying a fully completed aeroplane from us. And it gives them the ability, you know, and it opens the market for us. It gives them the ability to buy an aeroplane that they couldn't afford that's a high-end aerobatic aeroplane. So, you know, as far as our market goes, you know, we're probably cheaper than our competition. But we also give them the ability to become cheaper if they want to do a lot of it themselves. And we'll help them out, you know, through the whole.
So following on from Tim's question, how mechanically proficient do I need to be to put one of these things together?
Well, you own a Mustang.
Yeah, that's right. So as easy as a Ford V8.
Look, nothing's complicated. Like I said, we'll assist you the whole way. So what we have done, though, we've, you know, from the Giles you brought in parts, you know, and you assembled it yourself. And they had a lot of issues with that, you know. They had a lot of accidents because of it. And we want to make sure everyone's safe. So the structure itself we have built, so there's not a lot you have to do there. And it's built in our professional jigs, you know. It's built, you know, by professionals. So structurally, it's the best it can be. Fitting an engine, you know, it's not a complicated job. I mean, there's no IKEA manual, but you know, we'll send you a photo.
We're done then.
Avionics, but you know, like if you're an aviation enthusiast and you're surrounded at an airport, you'll be surrounded by guys that, you know, that are there to help you.
Yep.
If we can't, but you know, we're there, so you know.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing to do. Don't get me wrong, but yeah.
But people do it. You mentioned before that you get a lot of word of mouth sales, that your owners love these planes and do a lot of the sales on your behalf. What other marketing do you do? Like, how do you actually sell a plane like this?
Look, so we made Oshkosh this year, and mm-hmm. Oshkosh is probably the biggest air show in the world. It's designed.
Is that what you were coming back from when we met?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So that's the Experimental Association of America, pretty much. So that's their air show, and the advantage of the MX, if you're in that industry and you want a high performance airplane, you already know it. But you know, we don't do a lot of advertising. We sponsor a lot of the aerobatic clubs around the place. Oshkosh, obviously, we got there this year. It was our first year of actually advertising an airplane and having an airplane there. And I've got a guy in America that's big on the Facebook and the social media, and that's pretty much it. You know, yeah. I think the airplane sells itself. Mm. So
Avalon Air Show.
We haven't done Avalon. Avalon's probably more military size. We will get Avalon, though. Yeah, definitely.
So can we transition to quick questions, quick answers?
Oh, no.
Now, our warning, Jack, this is completely unstructured and mostly thoughtless. But the basic principle is quick questions, quick answers.
Which never actually happens.
Well, there's a first time for everything.
Go.
Let's do it.
How important is family to you?
100%. Do you want more of a...
No, that was good.
Family's everything.
Would have been a downside if you had said not that important.
That's right.
Not as important as my aviation business.
your flying abilities.
What's your definition of happiness?
Family. You know, it's about getting up every day and being able to smile, you know, and having a business, you know, has its challenges. And, you know, like I said, I'm not fixated on money. If people, you know, money's not a happiness. It's, you know, so, yeah. Just being able to wake up every day and have a smile. Yeah, knowing you're surrounded by good people.
Cool. At the moment, you're definitely surrounded by good people. What are you reading at the moment?
Reading? Paperwork.
Good answer. Last good movie you saw?
Actually, I've just got into Game of Thrones. I know it's not a movie, but yeah, I was never really into that medieval stuff, but that's pretty cool. Bit of nudity every episode, so.
Ticks all the boxes.
Yeah.
Your choice of food, what would you eat?
Japanese, probably my favourite. Yeah, I love the sashimi.
You say you're for Greek heritage?
Greek, yeah. Lamb on the spit.
What would grandmother be saying right now if she heard you say Japanese?
Sorry about grandmother, mum and dad.
Favourite holiday destination?
Broome's been our sort of... Broome's probably been our best family holidays, I guess. You know, we always stay at Cable Beach and it's a great place for the kids. I'd say Broome.
If you could change one thing in the aviation industry, what would it be?
Regulation. That was easy.
What bits?
Just you know, our authority is just changing, trying to change the regulations, and, you know, it's been up and down. You know, they're trying to change it, that a lot of us that have invested so much in the business are going to be hindered by it. I just don't think they understand that aspect of what we do. You know, we're all good people, and we're all trying to, like I said to you before, we want nothing but everyone to fly an airplane and everyone to survive it. It's like driving a car. It's not going to happen, you know, but we all do our best, and we're just, a lot of us are hindered by that, the regulation side of it, you know, and that's our biggest damner on our industry. Mm-hmm. From the guys becoming licensed to becoming engineers to running a business on a day-to-day basis, and yeah.
The future of aviation, are we all going to be flying around in autonomous taxis?
Well, people say that. I don't know if I'd get in one. Well, I'm saying that. I looked at trying to develop one. I think so. I think it's going to be something we're all going to have to grasp, you know. I mean, but like from flying from the front of your house to the city, I mean, you're going over so many residential houses, and it's the whole drone thing, isn't it? People don't want their privacy. So I think it's something we're going to have to adjust to.
Hmm. Coming into the fourth industrial revolution, the rise of automation, artificial intelligence, robotics, the Internet of Things, is any of that going to come into aircraft servicing and maintenance?
Look, I hope so. You know, the engines, obviously the turbine engines, you know, there's money in that. They develop that every day. They're obviously getting, you know, more fuel efficiency out of the airplanes. As far as GA goes, you know, we're still maintaining the same airplane that was developed 60, 70 years ago. I think a diesel aspect for a lot of the farmers, I think, you know, a lot of guys are pushing the electric aspect. It'll get there one day, I reckon. I think the battery power's got to catch up with it. I think so. I just don't think, like, the revolutionary age from a jet engine develops so quick, you know, and for us and the piston side of it, I think it's, you know, it's still got a long way to go.
Jack, we're about to get drowned out by a helicopter that's coming into land, mate. It's probably a good time to wrap it up. Thank you very much for that.
No worries, guys.
Great chat.
Thank you very much for coming out and saying g'day.
Cheers.
Thanks, Jack.
One of them's growing, not fast enough. One of them's flowing, not far enough. One of them's crying for what has made it sad. One of them's dying from what it never, ever, ever had. Wasting away, birds of a feather, counting the days, wishing for leaving, what it's like to be free, dreaming of sunshine. Cheers.
pushing for leaving. What it's like to be free, dreaming of sunshine.
Now to the debrief. We relentlessly pursue excellence on Unforgiving 60, and we want your insights and feedback. And indeed, if you know someone who has great insights to share with us that have a practical difference, then get in touch with us at debrief@unforgiving60.com. That's unforgiving60.com. We love speaking to anyone who's been walking on the path less travelled and is generally living the life less ordinary. And if you like the podcast, please rate us on iTunes. You can also follow us on social media. Just search at Unforgiving60, that's Unforgiving60. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, you know what to do. See you next episode on the Unforgiving 60.